Hey there, Pounders. This is J.R. Wilco with this week's Unnecessary Foolishness. It's episode 34 of the Superfluous Poppycock Podcast. I'm here with my good friend Seth Warren. How you doing, Seth?
Doing well. Doing really well. Wait, How are you, J.R.?
Oh, I'm fine. You sound kind of distracted. What's going on?
Well, I started watching the Spurs highlights from the Memphis games about 3 seconds ago, and I'm done. I'm officially done. So go ahead. We can start the
I can't believe it took that long. I didn't know that there were any.
It's been a crappy week, JR. One loss, and again, first world sports this problems. I'm a San Antonio Spurs fan. One loss
this week. First world problems. Yeah. A loss, and it's been a crappy week. Wow. You know, a lot of this year, you've been in talking to me about how cheering for this year's Spurs team felt different. Well, that this team felt different for you. I've come up with all kinds of theories as to why, beyond just the fact that no Tim Duncan, obviously. Right. I don't necessarily feel like the team itself feels different, but as a fan, I can tell you I just realized I feel different about this team than I have for like a decade.
Okay. I'll bite. Why are we different now than we have been over the last decade for you, though?
As a fan, I feel different cheering for the 2016-2017 Spurs because there's the absence of something that's been like a part of the Spurs fan experience since, I don't know, I want to say the 2007-2008 season. That defending, since they defended their fourth title, I feel like there's been this air, this atmosphere of, well, we better do it this year because we may never be as good as we are this year ever again with Tim Duncan. We got to maximize Tim Duncan. You know, he's not going to be this awesome forever. Just like that hanging over and over and over, season after season with, Right. There's another awesome game from Tim Duncan and we didn't win. There's another awesome season from Tim Duncan and we didn't win the championship. It's just like been hanging over the fan base, hanging over us like the sword of Damocles, if you know your Greek mythology. And this year is the first year since I can remember a decade plus when you could actually say legitimately, realistically, I mean, I want the team to win this year, but we could maybe be better next year than we are this year. When was the last time we could have said that?
You know, and I think it's a good point. I don't remember a year that we can, you know, look so optimistically to the forthcoming years. I for me, you know, you say it wasn't as much for you as it was about Timmy. For me, it was more about Timmy. For me, the sense of urgency was, we've got this guy that's not just a superstar but a GOAT. And we owe it to this guy. We need to maximize this guy's tenure with our team, whether it be, you know, you remember back in the early 2000s, we weren't sure how much longer we were going to have Timmy, whether it be via, you know, free agency or whether it be via injury. We weren't sure what kind of tenure we were going to get out of Duncan. And to go all the way up to 2016, I mean, it felt like every year for me from 2005 to 2016, there was such an urgency because we had the GOAT, and specifically for that reason. I don't know that for me it was as strong as simply recognizing that we could be better in a subsequent year. Saying you resided more in that mindset, though.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. That's part of the way that I feel about it looking back. Because that's absolutely how I feel about this year. I feel like we could be better 2017, 2018 than we are this year. I feel like 2018, 2019, we could be even better than next year. And that's it's frightening how good the team is already. Even though some nights it feels like those 2010, 2011 Spurs where it was just the big three and a bunch of stink. Where now sometimes it just feels like Kawhi and a bunch of stink. I was bouncing off of a coworker this week and just kind of telling him my story of my progressing from growing up in Houston as a Rockets fan and divorcing that Houston franchise, and then slowly coming to be a Spurs fan and dying with the team during the Lakers three-peat, and then, and you know, really like becoming a fan during that time. And I used the word adversity. I said, I've said this before, I've written this before, you know, multiple times, and nothing new to you. You become a bandwagon fan during good times. You become a fan during adversity. And he goes, adversity. And I like looked at him like, cause I was thinking he was going to disagree with me. And he goes, from a Spurs fan, that's rich. And I was like, well, relative adversity, of course, because he's a Rockets fan and he's right. Too young. The man is too young to remember Hakeem's wins. And I was just like, oh, no, oh, no, oh, well, that's too bad for you. That's sad.
Much of our fan base, possibly even much of the audience now, is too young to remember. I remember the adversity of being a Spurs fan, the perpetual Utah Jazz. Without the jazziness of the Utah Jazz was the San Antonio Spurs. The 27 dresses, the almost their team. I mean, I was a part of that adversity, and it cements your fandom, no doubt about it.
27 dresses?
It's a movie. It's a chick flick.
Oh, okay, I got you.
You drop Greek mythology on us, I can go into chick flicks rom-coms.
It's fine. I wasn't questioning your reference. I just missed it. I got it now.
Well,
the chick flick.
I can tell you this. It completely saves us from having to talk about LaMarcus, and I refuse to do it. I don't know how to say it. I don't know if you can share this with me. I feel a part of me is kind of over LaMarcus. And I'm not over LaMarcus in the sense of, screw this guy, let's get rid of him. Because it's LaMarcus Aldridge. And again, going back to that, you speak of your friend who kind of giggles and laughs at you. These are first world problems.
Yes.
They really are. Every problem we have as a San Antonio Spurs organization is a first world problem. We have LaMarcus Aldridge. The guy's a superstar. He's one of the best players in the league. There's no doubt about that. And if you give me the option of, would you rather have LaMarcus Aldridge or would you rather not have LaMarcus Aldridge, I'm obviously going to side on the correct position there. I get frustrated when the guy has averaged this past week, one game without Kawhi included, the guy's averaged 13 and 12 and a half. And that's not cutting it. That's not a number two guy. We need
a double-double, Seth.
Oh yeah! Congratulations.
First world problem, my friend.
He's like a poor man's David Lee is what we've got in LaMarcus Aldridge, except not the poor man aspect of it. I don't want 13 and 12. We need more than that. We need a guy to take over games. And if we're going to go anywhere, you know, I want to crack a joke about your vision of the future and not worrying about the future. And you know, my counter to that is, does that include LaMarcus being as demonstrative as he is this year? If it does, I'm not sure if we're better.
When you say you're over LaMarcus, here's what I hope that means. What I hope that means is that you're over expecting anything from him that he doesn't give on any particular night. That you're just like, hey, which LaMarcus is it going to be? Is it going to be the all-star caliber player? Is it going to be the guy that I look at the box score at the end of the game and go, oh, Pop didn't hold him out of this game? He was actually in the game? He was playing? Or is it going to be somewhere in between those two extremes? Because leading up to that Memphis game, I really felt like this was Pop from the Air Force Academy. Remember when they had the training camp just across the highway from you?
And I remember it well.
Yes. And they, all of the stories that were coming out of training camp was Pop remembering his days in the Air Force Academy and how they'd go into drills and they would give them certain expectations, certain goals they had to meet, and then they would take away one of their assets and say, you still have to finish the goal, and be like, well, we needed that thing you just took from us. We can't finish the goal without this. Like, you don't have it. Go accomplish your goal,
right,
and see what they did. And sometimes I feel like that's the way that Pop chooses who gets held out and when to rest guys, and goes, oh, Memphis is playing pretty good defense right now. I wonder what would happen if I just took Kawhi away. What would LaMarcus do? Yeah. And like, I was texting Michael earlier after the game, going, "Did he play? Oh my goodness! I just looked at the box score. Look at
exactly.
that. He was in the game.
And
you're
that's
kidding
not
me.
A star. That's not a superstar. No. It's not even a star.
Yeah.
And some would say, well, that was a poor game. Yeah, he shot 4 for 20 against Memphis. He had to go against Gasol. He wasn't consistently against Gasol the whole game, I would submit. But I would also submit the other two games that he played within this 4-game stretch since our last podcast, he had 12 and 14. So it's not like he had a dip into the Memphis game. He was a minus 24 in the Memphis game. And that's not even the only example that I'm talking about. Yeah, that's a loss. We can stripe, you know, your boy Bertans went 0 of 8. I mean, he was an absolute over in 15 minutes during the Memphis game. But I you can strike those quirks on the schedule, or those quirks statistically within a player's, I guess, his body of work. LaMarcus's quirks this season just seem so frequent. They seem more consistent than his starring games. And I don't mean to pick on him. Like I said, I started all of this rant to say I don't want to talk again about LaMarcus.
We fell right into it.
No, we did, because I'm sad.
I feel your sadness. I think I do. I think
34 minutes minus 24, 13 points without Kawhi. So it and where I'm going with all of this, and it gets back to what you said, you know, the feeling that this team is different this year, there's still that underlying, I don't want to say suspicion, or maybe just fear and anxiety that we are. The word is not top heavy. It's not top heavy. The Warriors are top heavy. They got no bench. There's nobody backing them up. The Warriors are top heavy. The Cavs are top heavy. We're not top heavy. We're mono heavy or uni heavy, if you will.
What you're saying is that we are too reliant on our best player to play at his best. Otherwise, the game's a toss up, and we could win or lose.
What does not faze us in any way about teams like Oklahoma City, teams like Houston, is they are basically a man deep. For the most part, they're a man deep. Houston without Harden is maybe an 8 seed, if even in the playoffs. OKC without Westbrook, probably not even in the playoffs, even remotely near the playoffs, if even in the league. He's keeping them in the hunt at this point. You have to wonder, when you see performances from our air quotes superstar LaMarcus Aldridge, our number two guy / number one guy, our two-headed monster, our two-headed snake doesn't have a head. I want to know that we're deeper, stronger than just, and especially in this NBA, when you've got to have two superstars. I mean, yours truly, this organization ushered in the model of big three, the true big three, to go the tenure of the career, to go the tenure of the legacy. And now every team has at least two superstars if they're going to be taken seriously. We got to have another consistent number two. I've said it before. I've said it many a podcast. We've got to have a solid number two. And now I'm wondering, well, could that be Powell? How quickly do we get Powell back? I mean, have you caught yourself thinking about that?
Earlier this week, absolutely. I thought about it. And we haven't mentioned this at all, you and I, all week long. But I actually thought about making that the lead for this podcast. Does the team miss Pau Gasol? Is that why we're not playing very well? Now, obviously, it's one loss in a week. And, you know, here, poor Spurs fans.
Fair, but let me cut you off. To be fair, it is one loss. But the other three games were not really that impressive, aside from the Denver game. We blew Denver out. Mm-hmm. We had some pretty tight games versus Philly.
Patty's not playing really well. Here's the thing. When you say we need a number two, the first thing, I think we mentioned this in a previous podcast, so I won't dwell on it, but I feel like sometimes the system is the number two, right? And sometimes I feel like the bench is the number two. We've got a situation right now where we've got so many first year guys stepping up into roles that have been filled by Spurs corporate knowledge guys, veterans who know their role, know what's expected of them, been here for years. and just all of that's gone. And we've got people standing up. Man, you asked a question last week. You asked me, who's this team's Tim Duncan this year? And at the end of Wednesday night's game, as they had finally put away the dreaded Philadelphia 76ers without their best player playing, who's standing there when guys are exiting the court, sitting there chewing on his mouth guard like crazy, and patting guys on the back and letting them go through? But Dwayne Dedmon.
Your boy Dwayne was?
Dwayne was doing that. And he had somebody else standing next to him, and it was kind of right outside of the camera. Couldn't quite see it. And I'm sitting there going, Dwayne.
He's a keeper.
That's great. I love it. But if this year's Tim Duncan is Dwayne Dedmon, then that doesn't say a whole lot about the roster as a whole as far as who's stepping up. I'm like,
no, there's a negative there. There's a positive there for Dwayne's development, and I've seen so much. You talk about demonstrative. Oh, my goodness. You talk about a guy who's really filling out into his role and getting into it and is passionate and is working towards where we need him to be. It's Dwayne Dedmon. But I share that with you. I mean, you need a guy that's – you need a guy that –
that's not in his first year with the franchise? Yeah. I think you do.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, that's just one part. And I think we said this very beginning of the season. I was thinking if we didn't talk about it at all. But you need so many people stepping up to do everybody to do a little bit of what Timmy did. He did so much to make this team who it is. Yeah. Yeah. And so if the one thing that Dwayne does is to step up there and say, yeah, sure, I'll do that little thing that Tim did, and everybody else pitch in and do, you know, everybody put their 2 cents in, and we wind up with a, you know, $1.17 at the end of it, that works, right?
Right.
Not that no one person can stand up for it. It's just the issue is, and I am, you brought it up about not us talking about it, but I'm going to go back to the LaMarcus thing, because he – from that mid-December point on, just was aggressive, was just on. What did he hit, like 70% of his shots through 5 or 6 games, and hit like 60% or in the high 50% through like almost 10 games? And it's almost like we don't have enough history with him, and it took us a while to figure out what we had and what we didn't have in Boris Diaw at his peak with us. But I have to hope. If I'm hoping from LaMarcus, what I'm hoping is that he's rope-a-doping the season. You know, he's like, okay, I'm comfortable enough in my role. I'm comfortable enough with the system. I know what Pop wants from me. Pop, that's what you can get from me in the playoffs. And until then, I'll mark some time.
Yeah, I hope you're right.
And to think that's my best case scenario is frustrating.
I think it's a reach. Yeah, it's a reach with LaMarcus, but it's probably
a reach. Okay, but he played like that. We were like glowing about him in the mid-season report. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we gave him something approaching an A because of those 10 games that he played, and that's kind of frustrating. On the one hand, on the other hand, it's like, you know what? If we can get back to that, if he can flip a switch and give us that, I'll suffer through. Another half season of a third of a season, 40% of a season,
right,
with him just marking time. If I can get that when it counts, but the fact is that's my best case scenario. That's what I'm hoping that we get, which, you know, it just again shows us how spoiled we were to have Timmy at the helm all those years, bringing it every single night and giving it. This is the big thing. This is my takeaway from the Memphis loss. As a fan, I feel upset when I look back on the game I just watched and feel as though I cared more about that game than the player I just watched lose.
Yep, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And I felt like that too many times, too recently, especially with LaMarcus, to be content. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Again, with the full recognition that this is a first world sports problem, But the simple fact is we're going to have a little bit more. We're absolutely going to have it, or we're going to be in a tough shape, because as it is right now, flirting with facing up with the LA Clippers in the seventh seed
goodness. It's why I told you that I don't like horror movies. Why do you scare me like this? You just drop that little thing. Oh, by the way, the very thing that you're terrified of will give you nightmares.
It's something I start watching for in February. I really start looking, and it's ridiculous because I know it's you know, it's far out, it's short-sighted. The way we play, the way we approach the game as a collective and on a season-type level, and not necessarily
roster,
game by
just
game.
That's an awful roster for us to go up against.
It is. It's tough matchups. It's guys that seemingly are getting injured at the right time so that they'll be healthy and rested
healthy,
and strong at the right time.
And just barely able to sneak past the 8 seed or
something
sneak
to
underneath
prove.
The 6 seed and sit
angry.
There and be... Yeah, you know what? I haven't done this in forever, but I'm telling you, if it's Spurs at the 2, Clippers at the 7, I just feel like emotionally checking out and just showing up to games and just counting them. Okay, this is how you watch a horror film. If you're going to watch one, I hate them, but if you're going to watch one, as soon as you start watching the show, every single protagonist, every single character that you meet, in your mind, you just count them as dead. Just going, oh, hey, here's a brand new character. Yeah, they're dead to me. Yep, you're dead. You're dead. I just assume you're gonna die. Well, it's a horror film, so I mean, you're dead. And then that's the way you progress your way through the entire horror film. And then anyone left over at the end, bonus.
Okay.
You just check out. You don't invest yourself with any of the characters because it's a horror film, and chances are they're going to die because most of them do. And that's the attitude that I hate as a fan. But if it's Spurs Clippers first in the first round, it's different if they're in the second round. It's way different if they're in the third round, because the farther that they go on, the less likely Chris Paul's, the less likely any of those guys is going to be at their peak, because I just don't trust them to go far in the playoffs and keep their body together when you're given full effort every single game. But in the first series, they are absolutely deadly and double deadly. They're like kryptonite to the Spurs, just the way they're made and how great Chris Paul is and the makeup of that team and the way they play and how they just and how all of their strengths just fit perfectly for us for the Spurs not to be able to counteract them with the strength of themselves. Is like strength versus weakness. I think I would just take my horror film mentality to that series and just emotionally check out from the get-go, and I hate being a fan like that.
Well, I'm not as a natural cynic and skeptic that you mock me for. I'm not even that, you know, far along. I don't think that it would just be a wash Clippers. I really don't. I think we're strong enough, and I like our trio, our big trio of Dedmon and Powell and LaMarcus going at their bigs. It's
but there's on no
the
one
perimeter
for Kawhi
that,
to guard.
Well, I
Blake
like Kawhi on Redick.
And
I really like Kawhi on Redick.
Look, going around screens the way that they send him, there's so much that is effective about the size of the person doing that. Redick is so small, and his ability, like, Kawhi's fast, Kawhi's strong, Kawhi's quick. But moving around those picks, Redick is going to get the room he needs to get his shots off. And so it's just like, I'm like,
but he's going to work.
There's no one
not,
for...
Yeah,
yeah,
I don't agree.
Like
he's gonna it's gonna work Redick. You and I always talk about the glue guy, the skills guy that's not necessarily in the box score, that's not necessarily the guy that's headlining SportsCenter, but we always call it the Nick Batum. He's the guy that's not necessarily the guy that's on the banner outside the stadium. That's not the guy we're talking about. We're talking about the guy that holds that team and that singularly wins the game for that team. And I'm trying to think randomly of other examples that you and I have come up with, but for the Clippers, it's hands down, it's Redick.
But that's Redick's job is to be fit enough to work around those picks. That's what he does every single night. It's in his wheelhouse. He's not operating outside of what he normally does in order to do that. And there's no one for Kawhi to just go out there and shut down. But Luke Mwabamute, I mean, he's not the scorer, right? So you put Tony on him and just hope he doesn't go off for 10 or 12 because he has one of those nights. One of those random Ibaka nights.
See, and I disagree with you. I think you'd switch Kawhi off of Paul and Redick. And ideally, I mean, the way the scenario plays out in my head, take their big two out of the equation in exchange for our big three. You know, you have Kawhi switching off with Redick and with Chris Paul, and you have DeJounte up to speed. You worked out all of these little learning curve 20-year-old, fresh out of school kind of kinks with DeJounte, and you've kind of gone through that pop hazing period, so to speak, and he's more settled in the game, and you give him a lot more run. Because with his length and athleticism, my gosh, that's going to tear up Chris Paul as well.
I think that the young guys are a great way to go, but I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment if you're expecting Pop to play DeJounte Murray through a playoff series. Moving to him at the end of a playoff series, once the dynamic of the series is set, and yeah, I can see that, but I would love to see him get run through the second half of this season, maybe after the All-Star break, maybe even during the rodeo road trip. I do not expect it. And I love DeJounte in the open court. I love to see him out there getting his chops. I'd love to see him just like get some playing time and get some more seasoning, even if it means that some games are closer or we're losing some or whatever. I mean, Patty is absolutely, and he's not in a slump, but he's in a funk right now. But honestly, right now, I do not expect to see him in a postseason matchup. And if we are seeing him, then obviously that would change the dynamic. But as is right now, I'm just like you say, Clippers at the 7 seed, first round against the Spurs. I'm terrified.
Well, and let's be clear, I'm with you. I don't like the matchup. I think, you know, for a first round matchup, that's a disaster. I mean, I think at best we win that series in 6 or 7, which is not what you want out of a first round, regardless.
Although it didn't hurt us in the last championship season, right? So maybe that would be a little bit of a good omen.
Maybe that wakes us up.
It's kind of pecking at the edge of my brain here. What I'm feeling like Jack Nicholson in As Good As It Gets, walking into the psychiatrist's office when his guy won't see him and he's just like completely wigging out, and he asks that question to the rest of the people who are sitting there waiting there for their appointment time. What if this is As Good As It Gets? What if this is what we've seen over the last the way they're playing right now?
And that's
this year's team, this 2016-2017 team. What if this is As Good As It Gets? What if beating the Sixers without Embiid on Wednesday by, 8 points? What if this is As Good As It Gets? What if Kawhi has to score 32 points for us to beat a subpar Eastern team by 8? What if that's As Good As It Gets?
Well, and this segues right back. This is a perfect radio segue. Right back where the beginning of the podcast we talk about, I'm just not in a good mood. I'm just in a foul mood about going 3-1 in the last week because of how we've looked in the 3 wins, aside from the, aside from the first Philadelphia game and the Denver game, more so the Memphis game and the recent Philly game. It comes down to that. It comes down to the realization, or at least the possibility, that, you know, we had this conversation a month, 2 months, maybe even 2 weeks ago. Gosh, Powell is out. He doesn't even know where San Antonio is yet. Imagine how much of an asset he's going to be when he's plugged into our system and he knows our rotations and he finds his stride. And then Kyle hits him in shoot around.
Oh, man.
LaMarcus, I mean, this is a guy, he's slowly developing himself. He's learning the system. Oh, my gosh, he's only improving, and Kawhi is getting better and better and better. All of the, you know, there's so much room for optimism, but you're right. I found myself thinking over the last week, what if this is it? What if we've capped our potential this year at this moment in time until, like you alluded to, obviously hope in your heart, next year we're even better than we are this year. And we just grow after we work out the kinks of these young players, these first-year guys. We get everybody more stabilized into the system, and we're playing true Spurs basketball, or we're playing true beautiful game ball instead of just glimpses here or there. It's a staggering thought when you think of it. I don't even like to consider it.
Staggering is a word. So is depressing as well. Because listening to you say that, the first thing that comes to my mind is, so at the beginning of the season, I was thinking, hey, Western Conference Finals, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Western Conference Finals and anything besides that is cake. But now if we're really thinking that next year is a better year to invest in emotionally than this year, goodness gracious, this is so depressing. Do you even want to go that far and put wear and tear on everybody to get to the Western Conference Finals? Or do you just want to, oh my goodness, why would you even ever want to get knocked out as soon as possible? I'm just like, I don't even want to think like that.
No, that's not even get that. That's the Houston Rocket mindset that's rising
up. All right.
But that's
right.
Not the Spurs mindset. My bigger concern when it comes to being a Spurs fan, especially within the last 7 days, I don't know if you watch, and I know we have a lot of listeners all over the world, and so I'm not going to say football because it's not football. It's American football.
If you
watch the Super Bowl, the big game in American football, one of the first things that I texted you is this how people look at us when we win? Is this what it feels like when the Spurs win to other people? And what did you answer?
I said no, because the Spurs aren't cheaters.
And that was it. Distinct, succinct, to the point, and you close the book on that. So it's hard for me to go too deeply in how awful things are and how gloomy and how terrible things
so
are.
You've actually depressed me.
I know. We might or might not make the Western Conference Finals. Boo-hoo-hoo. Because I feel as though it's somewhat unfair and disingenuous to the Charlottes and the Atlantas and what do we call them? Nooch still? The New Orleans
Nuchies.
Pelicans teams.
The New Orleans.
Yeah, the New
Oklahoma
Orleans,
Oklahoma City,
all of
Hornets.
The well, OKC. No, I don't. Yeah, I don't pull OKC into. They've had too much success for my taste in the last 6 years. But I feel it's somewhat on an ivory throne and on a pedestal. I'm hoping and trusting that things will come together, that things will work out, that LaMarcus will again have this springtime conversion in which he gets off social media and claims that's the secret to the downfall. Although I've been saying that for years, individually, social media, the downfall of society. If he realizes that, if he gets off social media, DeJounte works out the kinks, Patty gets out of his funk, Powell gets back rested, then I think we're going to be in good shape. I really do have a lot of hope and a lot of optimism for what's coming up in the next couple of months when our season actually begins as Spurs fans in April. I have a lot of optimism.
I just can't believe I let you get me so depressed in this podcast. I'm going to blame you. I'm going to blame the fact that I was sick enough to miss a day of work this week. Stayed home. I had a bug. It's just like tearing through Austin right now. Everybody that I talked to, everybody said, found out that I was sick. They're like, oh yeah, everybody I know is like dealing with this thing. It's like this funk
in
the head.
Yeah, it's all over Texas.
Oh, it's so nasty. So nasty. Well,
that's my goal as a sociopath, is to push you down to the depth of which you didn't think was possible, and then solely as your guardian and as your savior, pull you back up into a position.
Are you gaslighting me? Gaslighting me?
I'm totally catfishing.
Stop it.
Sean Blair and J.R. Wilco on the Superfluous Poppycock.
That's no good. That's no good. Well, it is the Superfluous Poppycock podcast, which means that we need a little lighthearted enjoyment at the end. Hopefully not too dark like the rest of this podcast feels like it was. Hopefully we brought some entertainment to some people and haven't just like been a huge downer the entire time. But tell me what you got for me, Superfluous Poppycock.
Speaking of tying this into our organization and who we all are as fans, I caught myself thinking, did you see the Charles Oakley news this week by chance?
I intentionally didn't dig into it because somebody sent me a link and I was like, I'm going to let Seth tell me all about that on Superfluous Poppycock.
It's so, like the Knicks are shooting themselves in the head. They stop and reload the gun. It's insane.
Aren't you supposed to shoot yourself in the foot? Isn't that what it is? Isn't that the way it works?
The Knicks are finding a way to miss their foot. I can tell you that.
And hit their head. Wow.
You just Google Charles Oakley, longtime, beloved New York Knick. I mean, this guy, easily in the top three or four fan favorite Knicks of all time. The guy goes to so many games in New York, hates James Dolan. It's without question, it's on record. literally has seats several rows behind him so that he can berate him and scream at him. Every time Oakley gets to the stadium, the staff has instructions.
He regularly yells at James Dolan. Is this a thing?
He berates Dolan. Yeah. You can hear it from the court. It's pretty brutal. And really, not really anybody disagrees with Oakley. The people that aren't berating Dolan during the games are berating Phil Jackson. So it's kind of like this it's kind of like this wave of fans in which one side says something, the other side. Regardless, Oakley was at the game this week and got into some fisticuffs and was arrested, was hauled out of the stadium by a team of security personnel. And it caught me thinking, because you have to, if you're a fan of an organization, who would our Charles Oakley be? Who would the guy be that is a wild card? And I love Oakley.
Wait, hold on. There's so many things that Oakley represents.
Yes.
That for you to say that who would the Spurs Oakley be? I mean, he played. All right. So first of all, he started as a Bull.
Let's take three seasons, 10 years with the Knicks. All of the comparisons and all the parallels, you're going to have to make some leaps, because obviously we're a much different organization than the Knicks. But who's the guy that it wouldn't – well, and I don't even say wouldn't surprise you, because there's not one person that wouldn't surprise me, I guess, if I'd heard this in San Antonio. I mean, this is just not something that we do. It's not something that happens there. We don't tolerate.
Are you talking about who's the loose cannon that could come and embarrass himself and maybe the organization by being at a game and then yelling at somebody? Well, it's Steven Jackson, easy.
That's exactly where I was going to go, with Steven Jackson. That's awesome that you picked Steven. Who else could there be?
Besides Rodman? I mean, he wasn't really with the organization long enough.
But even Steven Jackson, I can imagine being at the game.
Say that Rodman's probably less likely to go off at a game than Jack.
Well, and I can imagine being at that game and instantaneously taking Pop's side and the organization side and booing Captain Jack as they hauled him out of the stadium. I mean, I can't.
But that's not what happened, is it?
Oh, no.
In fact, they didn't get booed. They were like
– the majority of fans were supportive. In fact, many other players, as your social justice warrior LeBron James as of late, he came out and tweeted support. Reggie Miller came out and tweeted support for him. Anthony Morrow did. Jamal Crawford, a lot of former teammates. Spike Lee came out and tweeted support.
You know why all of these players are coming out to support him, right?
Because they love
if there's any ex-player that they're afraid of being slapped across the face by out in front of a bar, it's Charles Oakley.
Well, followed closely by Charles Barkley.
He's done it before. The man would do it again.
No, that's a good point. I think anybody in Jordan's back pocket as well is not somebody that you really want to piss off. But it was just a phenomenal story. It's one of the stories where you're just kind of like, you have got to be kidding me. This is nuts. It's entertaining to read, and if you haven't read it yet, you need to check out the gossip. Get the juice.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you for that superfluous poppycock, Seth. And that'll do it for this episode, Pounders. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep safe and let it fly.